genuine question now.
Go ahead.
When was the last time you experienced decent, not even like exceptional, just decent customer service?
Oh, long time ago.
I mean, there's no secret formula for it. Yet, what we do know is that most companies seem to be pretty bad at it. But not you, my friend. Not you, listener. Oh, no. You can create an amazing customer service experience when you use the brand new Service Hub from HubSpot.
Yep, this all-new Service Hub from HubSpot brings customer service and support together in one simple but powerful platform so you can deliver the best experience possible. And of course, it's powered by AI, not Al, AI, meaning your team can automate those tedious tickets from people who've clearly not read your frequently asked questions. Pain in the backside, aren't they? Oh, and by the way, organizations using HubSpot Service Hub are resolving tickets 13 times faster, helping them to close 42% more tickets per day. That means increasing retention by more than 80%. Thank you, people at HubSpot who did the maths on that one, because I wouldn't be able to.
I love a bit of data. Did you also know, Al, that it consolidates your entire internal knowledge base into one place? So no matter who is working on support, they'll have the answers at their fingertips.
I did know that because I wrote that for you.
Well, there you have it. Stand out from the crowd and migrate to HubSpot Service Hub today.
Visit HubSpot.com/service and learn how this all-new solution can help you deliver for your customers.
Hello and welcome to the Truth, Lies and Work podcast, brought to you by who? It's the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. My name is Leanne. I'm a business psychologist.
My name is Al. I'm a business owner.
And we are here to help you simplify the science, the psychology of work.
Yes, we are. If this is your first time listening on a Tuesday, come on, Leanne.
Sorry.
We're professional broad. She's just banged the microphone. I'm not even sure I can take that out in edit. If this is your first time listening on a Tuesday, you'll discover that Tuesday's a little bit more laid back than Thursdays. Mm. We're a little less professional. Leanne's just demonstrated by smashing the microphone. Thank you for that. Oh. Just really quickly, Tuesday is...
Oh, what was that, Al? I'm so sorry. Did you just drop your phone?
Shush. If this is your first time listening on a Tuesday, basically we just sum up what we've learned about work, a few stories, we tell you what's going on in the world, and then we have our world famous weekly workplace surgery, which I think we've nailed the name. I think we're going to stick with that, where we have the world famous amazing psychologist, business psychologist Leanne Elliott, who's going to answer your questions.
On today's episode of This Week in Work, we'll be asking, is Elon Musk the next Elizabeth Holmes? Mm. We will also be exploring why organisations that are cooperatives.
Nice pronunciation, yes, slightly different to the traditional pronunciation, but yeah, cooperatives.
Cooperatives often build great workplace cultures, and we will also be exploring some recent initiatives in the world of men's mental health. And of course, as Alice just said, our weekly surgery will come as well. Questions that I will answer, not about using mics or pronouncing the word cooperative.
In our weekly surgery, we talk creepy bosses, easing into a manager role after a promotion, and mini surveys for managers who care about their team. Plus, we have highlights from a recent podcast episode around burnout, where Jeremy Klein from Change Life Work podcast interviewed two incredible guests about burnout. Those guests were Al and Leanne Elliott.
It was us.
So we've got a little clip from that later on. Leanne, I think it's your favourite time of the week.
It is time for the news roundup. Al, cue the jingle.
What you got, Lee?
Well, I may have been accused in the past of unfairly branding Elon Musk as
many
a psychopath.
Times.
Well, yes. But to be fair, a lot of that was thanks to an earlier episode of the show. I mean, if you did actually listen to episode 14, you'll know that I was simply making the point that Elon Musk seems to exhibit some dark side personality traits that are modelled on psychopathic tendencies, and if left unchecked, could lead to his demise, as it has with many other leaders. I was just stating facts, Al.
Yes, you were. Spitting facts, as the kids say.
But it seems that the tide may actually be turning on Elon Musk's tyrannical reign at the top of the tech food chain. A Business Insider article this week caught my eye. Asana CEO Dustin Moskovitz. Have I said that right, Al?
Let's say Moskovitz. That sounds more like it. Yeah, go on.
So Dustin has publicly accused Tesla of misleading consumers on a massive scale, comparing it to the infamous Enron scandal. So on a post made on Threads, of course, Dustin claims that Tesla has been dishonest about the capabilities of its full self-driving software and the actual vehicle ranges, suggesting that these discrepancies could lead to significant legal and ethical issues for Tesla. So while the co-founder of Facebook, if you didn't know before he did Asana, he did Facebook too. I think he was the main one that kind of sued your man, wasn't he?
I'm going to have to watch the Social Network movie
Watch the movie again. It's quite good. So while Justin, I'm getting confused now because I'm thinking of Justin Timberlake, who is in the film Social Network. Yes, Dustin. So Dustin did not provide detailed evidence for his allegations, but he did share graphs. He shared data, Al, which he argues indicate deceptive practices by Tesla. He did make the stark comparison to Enron, the big energy giant that collapsed in 2001. If you've never heard that, go look it up. And basically said that Tesla could face a similar fate if the issues he highlighted are proven true. So while Tesla spokespeople have not formally commented on the allegations, Elon Musk has, of course, responded by making derogatory remarks towards Dustin on Twitter or X. Musk did later issue a backhanded apology whilst, of course, continuing to criticise and labelling Dustin as misguided and overly critical. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've been following this in the news. This confrontation does come amidst lots of other legal challenges and investigations that Tesla are going through at the moment, including probes by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Securities and Exchange Commission concerning the marketing and reliability of Tesla's driving assistance technology. There's also a lawsuit going on. So yeah, I mean, Justin has been a long-time critic of Elon Musk's management style and the valuation of his companies, and does suggest that Tesla and SpaceX are overhyped. And what I agree particularly with, that Elon Musk's leadership is over glorified.
Perhaps the cynical Al might be looking and going, well, Threads isn't doing that well, so perhaps it's just a way to get more people to go, oh, I might join Threads so I can follow this thread of conversation. So there's always that. However, Musk has had beef with pretty much everyone. He seems like a tough guy to get on with. I mean, there is that thought, and I do subscribe to this, that behind every fortune is a lie. And I don't mean that like in a nefarious sense. I just mean that I think that every fortune, if someone makes a lot of money, and myself included, you've fudged the rules at some point. And yes, that's me publicly coming out as being a fudger. That's probably not what I really meant, okay. Was it? But moving on. So
now you've come out, Al.
Anyway, fudging aside, I think that, yes, that's fine. There might be a small portion of like, oh, well, we over-exaggerated the range of the vehicle. But I've seen this like quite a lot independently on different things. Sales are down. Mm-hmm. People don't seem very happy with it. It was an incredible machine when it came out, but can you really believe it was as good as he makes out? Perhaps not.
There's also engineers, aren't there, that have left Tesla and now talking out about the massive safety concerns they have and may have been exited from the business rather than voluntarily leaving. It makes me uncomfortable because it's not a stretch, is it? You know, you've got somebody like Elon Musk who deals with the Twitter layoffs in the way he did, who deals with people on Twitter the way he does, that is so grandiose in his beliefs about his own capability and his own ability to change the world. It's not a stretch to think he's going to make that freaking happen. It is like Elizabeth Holmes. It was that idea that if I just make this other lie, then it's okay because we'll make it up in the next one, or make this lie, we'll make it up again. So it makes no surprise to me. And if you have listened to episode 14 of this show, not a different one of this show, then we did dive into the dark side personality traits as assessed by an expert in the Hogan Development Survey. I think overwhelmingly, we agreed that Elon Musk was probably a bad day from derailing. So do go and listen to that if you're interested.
In his defense, perhaps he's not. Perhaps he's just doing the best he can with what he's got. But
sure, Hitler had a similar worldview.
Goodness, well, that went to Hitler much quicker than I expected.
It always ends up in Hitler, didn't it? I just needed to get
there
quicker.
I'm going to move on from fudging, being a fudger in Hitler, to go, God, I don't know whether I'm going to have to like edit that out. That's one of those things that's just going to get us deranked or something. Anyway, so let me talk about something I saw today, which was a Spanish company called the Modragon Corporation. I'm sorry, that's probably a terrible pronunciation. It's the largest industrial cooperative in the world. It's based in the Basque country in Spain. Excellent wine in the Basque country. Go and try Chacolí, spelled with an X. And I also think that Albariño is from the Basque country.
Yeah.
Excellent wines. Anyway. So this was founded in about 1956, so it's not a new company. It grew from a socially engaged Catholic movement started by a Basque clerk, or cleric, sorry. What's the difference between cleric and clerk?
I don't know.
Anyway, well, I think
we'll Google that later.
Yeah, I think
we're asking about words. You said not to ask me about words.
Anyway, so it's founded.
Quotient, I'm still getting over quotient.
The idea is that the employees own part of the enterprises and they share in both the profit and the risks. If you're from the UK, you'll be aware of John Lewis, which is a very similar kind of thing. One of the reasons why John Lewis did so well over the pandemic was because everyone owned a little small part of it. Now, there is a company, there's a supermarket. If you've ever been on holiday to Spain, you might have seen a supermarket called Eroski or Eroski. We used to call it erotic because it used to make us chuckle. And it's one of those supermarkets where it's part of the whole chain. So everyone who works in the supermarket owns a small part of Eroski. I like this because you've got this sort of community, you've got this commitment, you've got this sort of workers are supporting each other and they're also supporting the cooperative. Incidentally, in Spain, cooperatives are quite a big thing because most of the olive oil that comes, that you buy on the shelves coming from Spain is actually from an olive oil cooperative. So there is a lady called Marisa Fernandez, who is part of the chain. She's been, I think if I remember from the story, it was about 30 years she's worked there. And when her husband sadly passed away from cancer, then her employer, Eroski, which is part of this Mondragon Corporation, they were really, really good with helping her around shifts, making sure she was paid for if she wanted time off, and just really supportive. And just doing that, like, the thing that most people should be doing, but most companies don't, probably Elon doesn't, I wouldn't imagine. And so when fast forward maybe about 10, 15 years and Eroski are opening a new store. There's some store renovations. Things aren't going that well. And so Marisa actually went and volunteered for extra shifts during the store renovations to help them get back and open on time, which was really lovely because it's showing that she really cares about the cooperative and the cooperative cares about her.
The thing is I see so many different things where it's like, why can't we be more like the Mediterraneans? Why can't we, you know, we work to live, not live to work. And even all the stuff around the Mediterranean diet and doing the Mediterranean diet and you'll live until you're 120. The reason people live until they're 120 is because they do prioritize life over work, because they work for organizations that prioritize their whole selves, their family, their things that they experience outside of work. And we also know as well from that Harvard study that relationships are the one thing that keeps us alive longer than anything else. And that's what you're building here in work, these relationships where you're going to have each other's back. You can't just pick up these lessons and go, oh, have a Mediterranean diet, you'll live to 100. Or let's change the food in the business cafeteria, the head office cafeteria to Mediterranean food, that'll help people. No, it's part of a whole holistic thing. It's part of a culture. And your whole culture needs to live and breathe these things. It's freaking yoga at lunch, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, what else you got, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, talking about health, an article about men's mental health in the UK did catch my eye this week. And I wanted to share it so we could talk about it and maybe help raise some awareness as we have across the podcast. But it basically reported that if you're not sure about statistics of suicide in the UK, about 6,500 people died from suicide in the UK last year. That number has been steadily increasing for the last 10 years. And of those 6,500 people, 75% are men. Men's mental health in the UK is unacceptably poor. So in East Sussex, an even more concerning trend has emerged in terms of the suicide rate amongst men aged 30 to 59, and they are consistently surpassing the national average for England. So more men in that part of the country are choosing suicide. So in response, public health officials are intensifying their focus on the mental health of men in the coastal towns of Hastings and St. Leonard's. So this initiative follows a 2021 report from the chief medical officer that highlighted mental health challenges in coastal communities are unique and people need support with them. That's including things like heightened feelings of isolation and loneliness. So yes, East Sussex are running regular sessions aimed at encouraging men to openly discuss their problems. The idea is to emphasise the broader impacts of mental health issues and does note that poor mental health not only affects the individual, but does have a significant repercussion on their families, their communities, their own personal prospects, and of course, the economy as well, if we want to be commercial about this. So events are being organised. People are being encouraged to share this article, encourage discussions on topics like healthy masculinity and connecting with nature and other things we can do to improve our mental well-being. Regular listeners will know that Al and I met volunteering for the Samaritans, which is a suicide prevention charity. And it is a mission that's very close to both of our hearts. And throughout the podcast, we have made a conscious effort to talk about mental health and within that, the lived experiences of men and men's mental health, including a phenomenal episode with Jim Young back in the day, episode 22, The Untold Heartbreak of Male Leaders. Whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, however you identify, this is not an episode that you want to skip. It is heavy, so trigger warning on that, but it is such an important conversation and one that requires listening to. So yeah, huge respect to East Sussex, not only for prioritising mental health, but prioritising men's mental health and publicising it too. Bravo.
Yeah, well done. That episode 22 with Jim Young was I think it still remains the only episode where I don't appear in any part of it apart from the actual core interview. It was quite revealing, that chat with Jim.
It's the only linear interview we've ever published on the podcast.
There you go.
Because it required no edit.
So definitely spin back to episode 22 and have a listen to that. As Leanne says, it's a tough listen, but it's me and Jim just being real honest about all kinds of crap, really. As a person in that age group that you're talking about there, yes, I can totally see why people would be, because there's two aspects that I think. First of all, if you're of that age, then you're probably brought up, you're going to be Gen X or very, very young boomer. You're going to be brought up with the idea that you're the man, you should be doing stuff, you should be bringing the money in, you should be going to succeed. There's also a huge amount of peer pressure there to succeed. I know that I'm okay with it now, but when we first started our journey moving around the world, which we've been doing for about 11 years now, I'd go and speak to people, my friends, and they'd be like, they've got a brand new Range Rover, they've built their business, they've got they're doing 100 grand a year. And at the time I was like, no, I'm not earning anywhere near that. And I just felt hugely like Leanne always talks about, a bit of shame around, am I wasting my life? The fact is, I look back and I'm like, no, it was fantastic. I spent an amazing time traveling around the world, 46 different countries with my best friend, my co-host, and my business partner, Leanne, and my wife, obviously. And so, it's just been, I think I can see where the pressures come from. I also think there's a second aspect. You get to that age, and if you haven't achieved something, you think, shit, what have I done with my life? And what am I going to do in my life? Perhaps you've got kids who are just starting to leave home. You feel empty. So I think there's so much going on around there. And so bravo to Hastings and, was it Hastings and East Sussex?
St. Leonard,
well done to the guys down there who are putting some stuff in place. And let's hope that it makes a difference. And if you are suffering, if anything I've just said there resonates with you and you haven't got anyone in your life you can talk to, then no matter where you are in the world, you can email Samaritans, joe@samaritans.org, link in the show notes, and someone will sit there, will reply to you and talk to you over email about how you're feeling. And if you do feel suicidal, you can definitely say that. Mm-hmm. And they will not try and talk you out of it. They will just ask you a bit more about it. So it's a huge and amazing service. Anyway, part of a mental health issues can be burnout. And as we alluded to before, we appeared on the Change Work Life podcast talking exclusively about burnout. Leanne was very honest about her experience of burnout. And obviously I gave my experience of being Leanne's partner at the time, being Leanne's husband at the time, not really knowing what to do. Here's a really short clip. If you like this, I suggest you go and listen to the full episode.
To the external observer, so, you know, the concerned husband, wife, work colleague, what sort of things might they see in someone who is possibly starting to experience burnout?
Changes in behaviour, changes in mood swings, unpredictability, irritability are all going to be signs that somebody is potentially struggling. Detachment from things that they used to enjoy, hobbies, people, socialising, friends, family, not wanting to go to places they used to go to, that sense of wanting to isolate socially is a big red flag usually. And I think any signs that might, I guess other things could be a lack of sleep, maybe looking for those more physiological symptoms, again, with caution, because of course it could be something else. But yeah, a lack of insomnia, not being able to sleep, hypersomnia, wanting to sleep all the time, changes in appetite, that type of thing can be a sign as well. There's quite a lot, actually, and there's some great resources. Just, you know, Google it. You'll find lots of different sites. Positivepsychology.com is one of my favorites to just give you those kind of red flags. But I think changes, it's as simple as someone going, they're just not themselves. Mm. And there's a stacking number of ways that they are not the person that you know and love.
And I think also, like Leanne alluded to before, the not wanting to dream anymore. So whether it's you just go, what are we doing at the weekend? Or what are your goals for 2024, 2025? You know, if someone's unable to answer those, it goes, I just haven't got the time to think about that right now. That, from a personal point of view, I noticed that in Leanne when she was burnt out, that she just would, and we didn't talk about this on the podcast, was that she just wasn't, she just got irate when I said to her, so what are we going to do, you know, next year, which was a couple of years ago, what are we going to do next year? Where are we going to live? What do you want to see? And she's like, I just don't want to talk about it, which is not like Leanne. As I think you mentioned before, we travel and we have traveled full time for 10 years. So we basically had a new address every 3 months. And this was just like, Leanne, I'm just not interested. And so I think if anyone you are talking to, your partner, spouse, kids, friends, and like Leanne says, they feel like they've not got the shine on the things they used to like, but also they don't want to dream anymore, is probably, from my personal point of view or my personal experience, it was a sign that Leanne was burnt out.
Jeremy was an exceptional interviewer, and it was a really great conversation. His show is really great as well. He explores lots of different topics around mental health, around career transitions, so much. And it's an established podcast as well, lots and lots of episodes. So do go and check out Change Work Life podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
After this short break, come back to us and join us for the weekly Workplace Surgery, where Leanne will be answering your workplace questions. See you in just a second.
I am quickly interrupting this phenomenal podcast to recommend another phenomenal podcast. Nudge. We love Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, a true gent. It is, of course, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. But that is not the only reason we're recommending it, is it, Al?
No, it's not. No, we've recommended it to lots of people. In fact, if you look at any of our YouTube comments, it won't take you long, there's about 20 of them, then you'll see that we recommend Phil to anyone who likes our pod. Well, on Nudge, you're going to learn simple evidence-backed tips. It's going to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, and grow a business. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest growing business podcast.
For now,
Phil, we're coming for you, buddy.
If you loved hearing Rory Sutherland from Ogilvy on our show back in episode 83, then Phil's latest episode has Rory on again, talking about McDonald's, smoking, and why the pension system is broken.
I suppose we should say that actually Rory's been on a couple of times onto Nudge. It's not that Phil's seen what we've done and gone, I'll have Rory. So I think it's important
for
us to say that.
We copied Phil. Anyway, listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's kick off the weekly Workplace Surgery with the first question. Lee, are you ready?
Contender.
On my first whistle.
I am ready.
Cool. Okay. By the way, if you have a question you want to ask me to ask Leanne, links in the show notes, you can email us and you can make it anonymous if you want. We have two anonymous and one non-anonymous. Anyway, so question number one. I'm chuckling because I've already seen question number one and you haven't. And so okay. I think you're going to like it. So anonymous writes, basically, my boss is an old school guy who thinks you should be honored to work in the job and should do anything for it. We've had several different disagreements recently, after which we met and he was trying to patch things up, but he ended it with, he said, well, tell me, who are your stakeholders? And I said, the customers and the people we help. He said, I'm your stakeholder and you need to keep daddy happy.
No.
This is what they said.
No, he didn't.
Let me just finish off. I'm also enjoying how I made that even more creepy by getting close to the microphone. I instantly felt super icky and made an excuse to leave. Should I say something to him or just pass this off as a joke that went wrong? Just to remind you, I'm your stakeholder and you need to keep daddy happy.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to pass Leanne the bin so she can vomit in it.
That's horrific. Run, run as fast and far away as you can from this man, he sounds. Even if it was a joke, it's not a funny one. It's wildly inappropriate. And actually, it sounds more predatory than funny. It's not okay. It's really not okay.
If you can see Leanne, would you can't? But she's got literally got her hands over her face going, oh my God.
It's really not okay. I can't stress it enough. That is not acceptable. That is not acceptable in the workplace. I think there's three options, right? You either confront the person, but you've got to ask yourself, what is this person honestly going to learn or take away from that interaction? Probably not. And you're probably just going to make your life a bit harder. You go to HR, assuming your company is big enough to have a HR representative in it. You report it. You go down the formal routes, and maybe that will help get through to him that at least, even if he thinks it's rubbish, he won't use language like that in the workplace anymore. Icky doesn't come close to the feeling that you, I'd imagine, you're experiencing. It's just, I'd feel a bit violated. I'd feel a bit, probably a lot embarrassed. I'd feel dirty, you know? And I think they've left a couple of clues here that just makes me think that this culture is not your vibe, my friend. One, because of that person. And two, you said, you know, who your stakeholders, the customers, the people trying to help. I'm your stakeholder too. Yes, of course it is. But ultimately, people have to agree on who the number one stakeholder is in an organization. Famously, Virgin prioritize their people. Other organizations famously prioritize their customer. If you're having this mismatch already in terms of who you think you're helping, who it sounds like you want to be helping, and what your leader is saying you need to be doing in a disgusting way, my thought would be this is not the company long-term for you. I know the climate is hard right now, but get that resume up to date, get on LinkedIn, get networking, get the hell out of there. And then if you have the means and the ability to do it, report it to somebody in a position of authority in terms of people and culture. Because if that person is saying this to you, it makes me sick to my stomach to think of what else they could potentially be doing to more vulnerable people within that organization.
Bravo. There's nothing else to add to that. That was superbly handled. And yes, I apologize for my creepiness.
That needs a trigger warning next time. Oh my God.
So question number two is from Amanda Wilcox, who's the operations director at MAP, which is an outsourced accountancy firm based in the UK, growing pretty quickly. Here's the question. One of our managers has asked us to create a survey for him to get specific feedback on him as a manager from his team. Currently, he's got 8 people in his team. He'll be 10 by the summer, which is excellent. I was going to start looking around for some ideas on questions, but you, Leanne, are probably the best person to ask about this. Do you have anything, or could you point me in the direction of some content that would be useful in creating this survey?
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for your question. I guess first point, how cool is this person, this manager that wants to invest in their own self-development and train themselves? If why not? Excellent. I'd say, yeah, hold on to this person very, very tightly. I do have some ideas. Of course, it depends. You know, I have to say that I'm legally obligated, I think, as a psychologist, to say it depends without more information, because I guess it depends on what this individual wants from the data and what they want to do with the data. But the vibe I'm getting is very much that this person wants to develop their own capability in a way that's going to have a positive impact on their team. So with that in mind, I would probably go down the kind of the team data route around well-being engagement type of thing. HSE management standards, we've talked about this a couple of times on the show before. It's a really good tool. It's completely free. It's 35 questions, so it's pretty light touch. And it'll give you some really lovely data that this manager can work with in terms of the demands on the team, the support they're given, the control they feel in their role, the clarity they have on the role, the relationships within the team, and how changes managed within the team, all things that we know are linked to positive performance, positive well-being, positive engagement. So from a very practical sense, that'll probably give the manager some really good things to work with. Similarly, if your 35 questions feels a bit too much, the workplace well-being question bank, pretty similar to the HSE, a lot more flexible. It's basically a list of about 100 and odd validated questions. So they've come from surveys where they have been proven to measure the thing they're meant to measure. That's also completely free. You can download it and you can pick and choose whatever you want. So you could do 5 questions, you could do 10 questions. There's also some other that is a bit more well-being focused in there as well. Some categories are. So if you want to dive into more of the health outcomes, you can do that too. And then finally, I'd say that's assuming the person wants to get data from the team. If they actually want data about themselves and their behaviors and competencies as a manager, there is a fabulous tool called the Real World Leader. It really is kind of the chef's kiss of management development psychometrics. It's 100% behavior based. It is built by psychologists, some of the leading thought leaders on leadership. There's a lot of leading there. Basically the best of the best leadership researchers have developed this tool. I've used it personally. It does go down really well in terms of development conversations. Downside, it is paid for. It does require at least 90 minutes of coaching from a qualified facilitator to deliver those results. And off the top of my head, that's usually somewhere in the ballpark of about £200, £250, including the cost of the tool. But it's a really good one. So if you've got a bit of money to invest, I would go with that. Otherwise, I would look at more kind of team-based psychometrics to give this person the tools they need. In any scenario, I would always recommend that you pay for a couple of hours coaching for this person so they can use the results, they can reflect on them and set action plans from it. That's going to facilitate the improvement and change that they're clearly looking for. So whatever option you choose, I would say to throw in a couple of coaching sessions with that too.
Love it, love it. Do they need to think about anonymity in terms of like such a small group of people and asking this, or is that different to culture workplace surveys?
Good question. I mean, typically, yeah, we want 10 people to be able to provide the reassurance around confidentiality and anonymity. That said, because it's a team, it's a specific team being asked to respond to it, they know that it's only their view that's going to be captured and recorded. So in terms of somebody opting in, they're going to know that anyway. And I guess the sentiment behind it is going to be, we want to do this to inform development and improve. It should still be confidential, whatever questions you choose. I would suggest putting that into something like Google Forms, where it's not going to collect an email address. So it can be anonymous, and it should be voluntary. So if people don't want to do it, you shouldn't be forcing them.
Good tips. And what you said there, £250-ish, what's that, about $300? Mm-hmm. That seems like a bargain to me. We're not affiliated in any way in the Real World Group, but that doesn't sound like, I thought if you were going to say 2,000, I'm like, well, that requires a bit of thought. But if you've got 10 people under you, then, you know, that's a tiny percentage of your monthly wage bill. So good for you. Good answer. You ready for question number 3?
Yes.
Okay. So this one is, I like this one. Okay. I like this one. You'll see why. I recently got promoted to a team leader position and I'm facing challenges with my new team. They've been together for a long time and I'm having trouble seeing them or them seeing me as their leader rather than just another peer. So I think the full part of this was that this person had been on the team, they joined the team and now they're promoted to manage the team. Have you got any tips on how to establish authority without coming off as overbearing? Now, you'll see why, because I think there's a few little avenues you can go down with this, particularly with the last line and the use of the word authority. Leah, go.
I agree with you. That word authority concerns me a little bit. It's not really about, great managers aren't necessarily about hierarchy and authority. It's about enablement and empowerment. Probably the easiest thing you could do is just sit down on one time with every single person on that team and go, I know how hard it is. I've been there and done it alongside you. These are the things that used to really annoy me and I'd like to change, but I'd like to sense check those with you. Are they things that would make your world easier? What else could I be doing to make your job easier and facilitate that? People are always going to struggle with that shift in relationship. And I've been there. I've worked in organizations where one of my peers has become my boss. I've also worked in a situation where one of my peers, I've become their boss. Hi, Alec, how are you doing? And it is a strange dynamic, but ultimately it's one that in both of those scenarios, with transition was quite simple because it was just a human adult to adult relationship. It was like, what do you need? This, let me get it for you. What do you need? This. Oh, it's a bit tricky at the moment with budget constraints, but let me see what else I could do. That's it. So don't worry about authority. Don't worry about being liked because people will like you if they make your life, if you make their life easier. And even if they won't like you, they'll respect you. And that's what you should be aiming for, not authority, respect.
100%. I think that it seems from the small amount that we've got from this this question that this person seems to fundamentally misunderstood what management actually is. And that's fair, because there's not criticism. I think anyone who's not met Leanne and not heard her version of what a great manager is probably thinks a manager is someone who walks into a room and goes, you do this, I'm going to go to my office and I was about to say something really rude then. I meant go
Daddy.
read the paper. Whereas what Leanne's basically, the way that Leanne defines management is that a manager almost works for their team. Like their team mm-hmm. is the manager's boss. And so you just sit down and go, how can I make your life easier? What can I actually do to make your job easier? And come to me with problems and I will do my best to solve them. Leanne always talks and has talked quite emotionally actually before about one of her managers who was the best person, the best manager in the world, and possibly the best man that ever lived, mm-hmm. John. I will put a link in the show notes. Definitely go back and listen to her story. I think it's around Christmas time where Leanne talks all about John and how amazing he was. But John did exactly that. And I never met him. But the way that Leanne would describe him, John would sit down with Leanne, and John was fairly high up. He was like second in the company, I think. And he'd sit down and go, Leanne, how can I make your job easier? Let's go through all of the individual aspects of your job mm-hmm. each month and go, is there anything you're struggling, any roadblocks?
More than that, he'd talk to me regularly, he'd talk to me weekly. I'd probably talk to him every day about various bits and pieces, not crisis stuff, but just kind of checking in, you all right, what's occurring? But yeah, at least once a month, but probably more than likely once a fortnight, he'd take a very practical angle to the conversation. But he'd take it one step further, and he actually sat down with my members of staff every quarter to ask those questions. So, you know, people sitting with one of the directors of the company two steps above them, but he'd take that time to do it. And that was one of the most powerful drivers of culture within that contract, because it demonstrated that the management team cares, because not only do I want to try and make your life easier, the director of the contract wants to try and make your life easier. It can be a misunderstanding that how do I make your life easier means that you're going to be walkover, it means that you're going to be soft, it means that you're going to be too nice, it means that you can't have these performance-driven conversations. And that's not the case at all, because if you couple that, what is the term is empathic concern, how do I make your life easier? If you couple that with absolute clarity around individual roles and in terms of how that role contributes to mission delivery metrically, so whether it's a sales number, whether it's an administrative thing, whether it's an efficiency thing, if you've got your KPIs in place, you're working with your team members to help them hit those KPIs and they're not hitting them, and you're then saying, we didn't hit that. What happened? What can we do differently? Was it circumstance? Was it some support you need, some training you need? And that continues to happen and they don't hit their metrics, then yeah, you are going to have a difficult conversation. That person is probably going to be performance managed out of the business. But that won't come as a surprise to the person. That will be very obvious that constructive conversation is happening. And speaking of this, you know, this contract, I remember people exiting the business who would continue to be very good friends with the rest of the team and the managers on the contract, because it was done in a humane, clear, supportive way. It's like we talked about PIPs a few episodes ago as to if they're good. If they're executed well, then they are. So, yeah, I think ultimately probably need some training. Get yourself on some training. Go and look at Dave Klein's course. That's probably a really good start.
That really is, yep. So that is the end of another Tuesday episode. If you haven't enjoyed it, then let us know privately. If you have enjoyed it, then tell the world. No, seriously, you can tell us, give us any kind of feedback. Go onto LinkedIn and you'll search for Truth, Lies and Work and you'll find Leanne there. Actually, proper Leanne, not like our assistant or AI or anything.
Yeah.
It'll be actually Leanne answering your queries and questions. If you have a question for next week, then check out the show notes. You'll find a way to get in touch. Anything else to add before we say goodbye, Lee?
I don't think so. If you do have a question about work or indeed about podcasting, it's not just constrained to workplace culture. If you want to know what makes a great interview, how to listen better, or how to produce a great podcast, maybe we can throw some questions towards Al.
Oh, well, I'm not sure I like that idea. I think you better go quickly. I might cut that bit out and edit. So we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. After this very short break, you'll join us for a weekly workplace surgery where I'll be answering. Well, no, I won't be. Sorry. If this is your first time listening on a Tuesday, then this is all about